Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, everyone. Welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. On this weekend show, we have a lot to talk about in terms of some volatility and market weakness to start the month of September. It was a shortened trading week, but boy, oh boy, we saw volumes tick up and we saw traders clearly come back to their trading stations and move these markets again, almost with that underlying defensive tone or maybe just more nervous tone that we saw from the investors. Just as a note, please be sure to go back through our website, kereport.com, and podcast or YouTube channel. Just search The KE Report to listen to all our daily editorials and company updates, which this week, a lot more companies came back to their desks and issued news, getting ready for some upcoming resource conferences. First half of this show, we're going to be focusing more broad market. Second half of the show, going into the resource sector, but we are talking with two more high-level guests here that really are just trying to make their clients money and make the most sense out of these markets as they can. We're kicking off the show with Mike Larson, editor-in-chief at Money Show. Mike, last time we had you on the show, look, you have been along the narrative of be bold in these markets, but you had an asterisk last time we chatted that was be bold, except in September. So far, that seems to be the case. Mike, how is this continuing in your eyes the rest of September?
Yeah, I probably could have been a little more explicit. I think I might have had that except in September in footnotes instead of on the main page. So, you know, my mea culpa on that one. But I would say, you know, look, I think it's a well-known fact that markets, historically speaking, don't tend to do very well in September. I mean, there's some good data, you know, from a couple of our Money Show speakers, Ed Yardeni, Sam Stovall, CFRA Research, a couple of them I'd cite. And they note that historically it is a weak month for the market. I don't know kind of what drives that other than it just happens to be one of those seasonal things that you see. But we're kind of living up to that already, right? We've seen a lousy start to the month. We had in August, obviously, some volatility where we had a big drop, gained it all back. But now we're into more of that choppy environment. I think it all boils down to people trying to figure out that there's a thin line between hard and soft landing, right? I mean, I think that's kind of what the market's wrestling with here. Did the Fed screw up by not getting the process started of cutting rates? Arguably, I said it back then, and I think it still holds true. I think the Fed, quote unquote, should have cut rates 25 bips in July. I also said the Fed, quote unquote, would not cut rates. It was one of those things they didn't have the cover for. They weren't ready to do it. Well, they probably should have. But then again, I'm not sitting around that table in Washington, D.C. So my opinion is just an opinion and is not something that drives actual activity. With that said, I think we're in this situation where, you know, with the Fed meeting coming up later in September, I believe, you know, again, we're speaking before we have the NFP, the non-farm payrolls number. But we've gotten data this week already. The JOLTS data on the jobs market, some of the other data out there that we've gotten over the last several weeks, whether it's inflation, whether it's jobs, whether it's, you know, other things, consumer confidence and business spending and so on. It all is pointing to an economy that is cooling. I don't think it's pointing to a recessionary economy, but it is an economy that's weakening enough that the Fed should be cutting. And I wouldn't be surprised whatsoever if the Fed ends up going 50 in September. Again, the data to me is pointing that they should do that. And unlike in July, where I said they wouldn't actually cut 25, I would lean towards them cutting 50 later this month. And I would point out also, of course, you've got other central banks that are already on the move. But just this week, we saw the Bank of Canada cut interest rates for the third time in three consecutive meetings. I'm going to be up at the Money Show in Toronto next week, Friday and Saturday, the 13th and 14th. And one of the big things our speakers are going to be talking about is, hey, the Fed is about to cut. The Bank of Canada has already been cutting. It's been joined by some central banks overseas. And arguably, you could say the Fed is bringing up the rear of this train, not leading the charge. So it's going to be interesting to see how things shake out. But that's kind of what I still see here. I think this is more seasonal and more just wishy-washiness over soft versus hard landing. I think that the Fed, you know, might have missed its mark a little bit. And instead of being wildly behind the curve, I think they're just a little behind the curve. And they can play a game of catch-up. And I think the markets can handle that once we get through the next, you know, month and a half.
Yes, Mike, behind the curve. That statement was coined because the Fed is perpetually behind the curve, whether it's on the tightening side or the loosening side. And so, yeah, maybe room for a little catch up doing a 50 basis point instead of a 25 at the September meeting. Just curious if you think the markets have already priced all this in, because we heard for the last year and a half that we were anticipating these cuts. Markets and commodities together all kind of have anticipated that this is going to be a cycle of cuts and loosening, not just a one-off event. And so they think, okay, more easy money, that's good for the markets. But at this point, a lot of that seems to be priced in. And historically, when the Fed starts a rate cutting cycle, it's actually negative for the markets. It actually has preceded many market sell-offs. How are you reading that dynamic?
Yeah, it is kind of tricky. I mean, we're seeing, for example, in the U.S., the 2-year, 10-year treasury spread, this measure of the yield curve, as negative as it was for, I think, 26 months, if memory serves, is now starting to flirt with flipping positive. Historically, when the yield curve has gone from inverted to uninverted, that has corresponded with some times when you're either on the border of recession and or market weakness or close to it. So some people are worried. That said, eventually you have to uninvert, and you can uninvert in a way that's not necessarily terrible for the economy if short-term rates move down quickly or if the Fed kind of gets back caught up with the curve, for lack of a better expression. I still am relatively optimistic that's going to happen. If you look at the forward path of the rate futures market and what's kind of priced in, I mean, yeah, there's cuts through the end of this year. There's more cuts in the first half of 25. And they kind of have the market price, the Fed funds rate price, you know, instead of being here in the low to mid fives, dropping down to the low to mid threes over the course of the next year. I don't think that's unrealistic. I think this is an economy where inflation has come down. The Fed should have already been moving. Growth is cooling, in my opinion, not recessing. And in that environment, if you don't get nominal rates lower, real rates go up, your policy gets tighter, which doesn't make sense for this phase of the economic cycle. So I think the Fed should be moving. It will be moving. And as far as markets pricing things in, again, yes, we have priced in. We have a soft landing environment, generally speaking, priced in, even with the very recent volatility in September. I mean, obviously, before this happened, you had what? S&P and NASDAQ up 18% year to date, Dow up about 10, 11%. And Canada, TSX was up about 10, 11% year to date. I mean, those are kind of pricing in a no credit crisis, soft landing-ish environment. And I still believe that's the case. If we do get more turbulence, if we do see credit markets start to come unglued, if some of these things that I think are just basically background sicknesses that can be handled with long-term medication versus acute problems, i.e. the commercial real estate losses people have talked about and so on, if all that comes to pass, we'll be fine. We'll just probably be in for a lousy 4 to 6 weeks here. Again, but I do think that, and I do tend to agree that we're going to see some rockiness here. I think that's going to be the message I've already kind of expect. And from some of the talks I've had with people that are speaking at our Orlando event or in Toronto, that's kind of what they're looking for. And the people that are telling you that aren't these sort of Johnny come latelys that see 2 days of lousy market action and say, oh, gee, now the market's going to be tough. It's people that have been right as rain for the last 18 months saying the market's going to be strong. So I tend to weight the opinions of those people who have been accurate for some time. And I think that it's fair to say there is some nervousness about this period, and I think it's justified.
Yeah, I focus on those people more as well, Mike. But in all fairness, you are one of those people because you were relaying the message on the downside when the markets were correcting about that 2022 time frame. And then you flipped as the markets moved higher, and it has been a strong market for over 2 years now, about 2 years, actually. Look, we need to understand that whether it's 25 basis points or 50 basis points, that in the whole scheme of things is not much when you consider that the start of 2022, rates were at practically zero. And then they went to over 5% in about a year and a half. It's one thing I've noticed in Canada, too. We're 3 rate cuts in now. It hasn't sparked the home market in the sense that some people think, because what I'm hearing is people are saying, well, we're in a cycle here. Why would I lock in rates now if they're going to keep going lower? How does that psychology play into investors' minds when, yes, we're starting rate cuts, but there are probably a lot more coming?
Yeah, I mean, you're well aware of the mortgage market in particular works differently and is priced differently in Canada versus the U.S., just given the prevalence of very long-term financing here, 30-year mortgages, fixed mortgages being much more common versus variable shorter term in Canada. I think that's one of the reasons, obviously, our economy is less sensitive to rate changes, and especially in this cycle, because let's be honest, I'm one of them. I'm one of the people who refinanced into a 30-year mortgage at 3.25% back before rates shot up. And then in the U.S., a 30-year fixed went as high as about 7.25%, I think, at the peak. And now it's maybe back down to 6, high 5s, or low 6s, excuse me. And that, right, what am I going to do? Oh, shoot, you're going to have to pry this mortgage out of my cold, dead hands, right? It's one of those things that a lot of Americans are locked into low-rate financing. And that's why the market, the housing market in particular, has been somewhat stuck. I think that one of the speakers I was talking to in Canada had pointed out things like condos, pre-construction, given price declines and issues in some of the big cities, that part of the market's probably going to stink for a while. At the same time, some of the not so expensive single family type properties, other non-core markets, kind of what people are looking at to own for the long term versus speculate in for gains, those might be in slightly better shape, and especially as rates come down. So that's kind of what people are looking for that I've spoken to. I think in the U.S., gradually things will come unstuck. And I think you're already seeing that in commercial real estate. I mean, one of the reasons why REITs in the U.S., they were lousy performers for 18 months. But lo and behold, look at what's one of the strongest market sectors in the last 8 weeks. It's REITs. And I think that's logical. There's some data out there suggesting that the gulf between the unrealistic sellers in commercial real estate that have been sitting on these properties, they're valuing at $100 million that are really worth $80, $70, $60 million these days, are now saying, "Yeah, I'm going to eat some of these losses. I'm just going to move on. I'm sick of holding on to this." And the rollover in financing rates is allowing buyers to say, "You know what? These sort of vulture buyers or cheap buyers are coming out there out of the woodwork and starting to scoop things up." So you're getting that market unstuck. I think it's a very gradual process. We all know from the last housing cycle on the residential side, this process takes years. It's not like a stock of stocks, which move very quickly in short periods of time. Real estate moves very slowly in long periods of time. But the process, I think, is underway, and lower rates, all else being equal, are going to be beneficial for that sort of healing process.
Well, Mike, just to that point that it's a long-term process, not an event, and that as these rates start coming down, it's going to help definitely with not just the home, but auto industry and anybody, a small business that needs to get a loan, getting a little bit lower rates. But we've talked a lot about in the past that it was also a process of how businesses and consumers would be hurt over time because not everybody's rates rolled over at the same time on their loans. So is it possible that the rates still being quite a bit higher than they were, like when you were talking about getting home rates at 3%, a lot of people have had their stuff roll over in the last 6 months or a year, and they're still going to have it rolling over in the next year or so. Could we still see pain from the higher for longer rates because it's not like they're back down to the levels they were a couple of years ago?
Yeah, I mean, again, I don't know if we'll ever see, for ever is a long-term word, but I don't know how long it'll take to see the kinds of rates we saw at the depths of that sort of post-COVID environment where everything was extremely, extremely low. So yeah, I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon, but I do think what that will mean is, yeah, we went from in the U.S., and again, if I use a 30-year fixed mortgage as a benchmark, we went from the absolute low around 2.5 to 7.25. We're probably back around 6. So maybe we get to 5-ish as a result of the Fed cutting, maybe if you're lucky, high 4s. And that's about it, because you know that even if the Fed goes low, you still have a rate premium, especially as the yield curve re-steepens on top of long-term rates over short-term rates. You'll tend to see some resistance to mortgage rates falling too low. So I don't think that you're going to see this hyperactive environment. You're just going to get back to more of a balanced environment. And I think one other thing I'd point out is you really didn't have the same stupid financing stuff going on in this housing cycle that you did in the last one, where it was, you know, clearly just absolute reckless. It wasn't just low rates, it was absolute reckless lending policy. This time around, you got the low rates, but you didn't have every Tom, Dick, and Harry getting a loan or not justifying or not recording their income or not having their credit score checked and this, that, and the other. So I think some of the ingredients, and you didn't also have the wildly speculative building going on. So I think that the sort of healing process is going to take part differently and not take as long this time around that you had in the last cycle. It was clearly a housing-focused bust in the markets and the economy.
Well, and that's the thing, right? Is there a glaring sector out there where you see it potentially having that bust, that contagion impact to all the markets?
Yeah. Again, we haven't seen it for some time. I think if it was going to happen, I think it already would. I would argue that what you saw, and to some degree, as a matter of fact, I would argue that what you saw with the banks that started failing in 2023, with the tighter lending standards we saw in commercial real estate and some of the Fed data on that back then, we've already had it. I mean, if you look at the Fed's own data, the last couple of quarters where they, their bank lending data, where they go out and survey banks and say, are you getting tighter or looser with your loans when it comes to commercial property, when it comes to credit cards, when it comes to auto loans and all that? the peak tightening of that was 3 quarters ago. It's been loosening the last couple of quarters. So the Fed's own data suggests lenders are getting less strict, even as the news media is still saying it's a disaster. Data from earlier this year suggested that those active in the real estate market, after being basically sitting on their hands and fighting and not taking losses and not looking to buy, deploy capital for 2 years, have started to change their attitudes in Q1 of this year. So all the data suggests that part, that crisis has passed its peak crisis point. I'm going to be wrong about that if all of a sudden we get some huge credit seize up, we get big worries about a hard landing, we get the Fed being way behind the curve and all of that, and getting this market turmoil going from being a seasonal thing to a wide, broadly based credit crunch. I don't think that's going to happen. I suppose that's one of the scenarios that's possible out there.
Well, Mike, what does all this mean for the bond market and the U.S. dollar? Because they're so interest rate driven and everything is based on the U.S. economy and the health and the outlook. If we are getting into a contractionary period, maybe not a recession, but maybe just a slowdown, what happens to the greenback and what happens to bonds? Do they start acting like a safe haven again, or are they something that people are still going to be avoiding?
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned. I mean, back in June, I wrote a chart of the week column for moneyshow.com in our newsletter. And I said, you know what? I want to buy bonds here. I think that we're done with this bear market. TLT, I didn't look at it today, but I think up from that point in just 2 months is up about 10% when you include yield and capital appreciation. I think bonds are finally a good buy. Not goodbye as in wave goodbye, but a good purchase, a good buy. As you guys know, I've liked gold for a long time now. I think that it really should turn on the jets moving forward. It's already beating every major asset class year-to-date performance-wise. I accept crypto if you want to include Bitcoin in that, but I think that's going to continue. I think that lower rates are bullish on that. The Fed cutting cycle is bullish. I also think the dollar is going to roll over. I think we've already seen some weakness. The factors that drove dramatic U.S. dollar strength in 22 are gone. If anything, we could see a reverse process now. And we're starting to see. So that's another bullish factor for gold. I mean, I think precious metals, I think, again, they've been very strong performance. I don't see anything that changes that. If anything, I think they perform even better in the back half of this year. And I think you want your exposure there. I don't think things change next year either. As far as, again, some of these other things for equities, it might be a rough 4-6 weeks. But if I'm right and some of the smart people that I follow are right, this is probably just a speed bump versus the beginning of the end with quotes around it. I always go back to saying, look, we had a market crash in 22, obviously in COVID, and we bounced back quickly with all the money, but we had all markets stink in 2022, from bonds to stocks. Precious metals were flat, so I guess relatively speaking, they stunk less. But you had all the dot-com stuff crash. You had CRE get into a lot of trouble, and then you had the bank failures at the beginning of 2023 because of it. I mean, I just keep going back saying, look, things were pretty terrible for a while by market standpoint there. And we're only, 18, 20 months into the recovery from that. So more of a speed bump than the end of the line, as far as I'm concerned.
So true, Mike. 2022, it was painful for investors almost across the board. It seemed like it was death by a thousand cuts as the market just kept moving lower. But boy, oh boy, it bounced back. And now it's been a couple of years of pretty good action. What about commodities, though? Because this week hasn't been overly good for commodities broadly. Oil, as we're recording this, under $70 a barrel. Copper moved back down to right around $4 a pound, although it has bounced a little bit there. What's your outlook on commodities, all taking into account that continued weakness out of China?
Yeah, I mean, the growth-oriented or growth-exposed commodities, are they going to like a soft landing scenario in the U.S. with some more China weakness? No, I mean, that's not a good story, right? So I'm not surprised by what we're seeing in things like oil, things like copper. I think that, again, they've got conflicting factors pulling at them, whereas to me, the bull case for things like precious metals is much clearer across the board. So yeah, I think that you're going to see just kind of blah action in that sector. I don't think crude oil is crashing. I don't think, yes, we broke that 70 level. I don't see $50 crude in the U.S., for example. And, because I think especially groups like OPEC Plus are watching this, and they're going to probably roll back some of their production cut or production re-increase talk that they have. They're probably going to give up on that. And you roll it all together, and I think it's an environment where that is again, it's not going to be something that's terrible, but it's not going to be great either. So if you're in the commodity space, I think you shade your exposure towards precious over base and metals and other commodities. Same thing. Gold, I think, outperforms as it has been for the year.
Okay. Mike, always great chatting with you. Again, Mike Larson, editor-in-chief at Money Show. I will post a link to the Money Show website in the show notes. That's where you can learn more about all the upcoming conferences that Mike will be at, along with all the other great guests that are featured and present at those conferences. Mike, it's always great chatting with you. Thank you very much for taking time on this weekend show. We'll chat again in another couple weeks.
Thank you, Corey. Take care.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.